We have some sad news to pass along on this Tuesday. Clotilda Woods, the mother of Tiger Woods, has passed away at the age of 80. Tiger posted this message to his social media this morning. "It is with heartfelt sadness that I want to share that my dear mother, Clotilda Woods, passed away early this morning. My mom was a force of nature all her own. Her spirit was simply undeniable. She was quick with the needle and a laugh. She was my biggest fan, greatest supporter. Without her, none of my personal achievements would have been possible. She was loved by so many, but especially by her two grandchildren, Sam and Charlie. Thank you all for your support, prayers, and privacy at this difficult time for me and my family. Love you, Mom." Clotilda Woods, a fixture throughout the years of Tiger Woods, from St. Andrews in 2000, where he completed the career Grand Slam at the age of 24. Of course, the 2019 Masters, that 15th major, and his induction into the World Golf Hall of Fame as well. Eamon Lynch, this was a person who was really side by side for so many of Tiger's biggest moments in this game.
Yeah, and moments like this are never easy at any age and in any circumstances, Damon. And, you know, Tiger's name is in all of those trophies, but what you got from Tiger's statement there was the acknowledgement of who put him on those trophies. And Earl, his father, was very much the public-facing, gregarious figure in golf. Clotilda Woods was the steel behind. If you want to know where Tiger's grit and resolve came from, you looked to his mom. And Tiger's always said that she was the enforcer in the family. So can you imagine how strong a personality it takes to intimidate Tiger Woods? Well, that was Clotilda Woods. And, you know, the last time we saw her in public was at the TGL match in Florida last week. And, excuse me, at this moment, it seems like a perfect sign-off when Tiger looked up in the stands and said, "Hey, Mom, not going to suck today." That was the motto Clotilda Woods sent him into life with, and job well done.
She was the motivator. She was the one who was the driver, logging all of those miles in Southern California from tournament to tournament, you know, picking up the food at the restaurant. She was the one who said, you know, step on their necks. She was the one that really added that toughness to Tiger, that second sucks mentality. That was not from Dad necessarily. He had his own role, but it was tiny Tita Woods who was truly the enforcer.
Yeah, she's not a woman to be messed with at all, as Tiger has acknowledged throughout his entire public life. And all of these careers that these guys put together are team efforts. In a way, so much of it is the family around them. And you hit good times and bad times along the way, but Clotilda Woods was at his side. Didn't matter if it was a good time or a bad time. She never left his side, and he never forgot that she was the one who put him there.
And how about the symmetry? And you mentioned it, from St. Andrews to the SoFi Center. She was there for so many of these moments, the highs and the lows as well.
Yeah, I mean, she was there. She wasn't going anywhere, and Tiger knew that. And there's a certain comfort that comes from knowing that she was always going to be the voice in Tiger Woods' world that was going to tell him what was what. When you ascend to the level of superstardom that Tiger does, the voices in your head can all become a little samey. It can become, you know, part of the payroll, folks. Well, Clotilda was never on the payroll. And Clotilda Woods was always going to tell Tiger Woods what the truth was, whether he wanted to hear it or not. And I think that served Tiger Woods very well through very different stages of his career and life.
Yeah, a very sad morning in the game. We at Golf Channel send our heartfelt condolences to Tiger and the entire Woods family. Clotilda Woods was 80 years old. And you're looking live at the 16th hole at TPC Scottsdale as the fans turn up the volumes for the PGA Tour's loudest tournament of the year. The party's already getting started on this Tuesday as Golf Channel is live on site all week. Now, Larry Fitzgerald spent 17 years in the league, regarded as one of the best to ever do it. Wide receiver, making the Pro Bowl 11 times, ranked second all-time in career receptions and receiving yards. Also holds more than 40 franchise records with the Arizona Cardinals, including receiving yards and total touchdowns, and will no doubt be an NFL Hall of Famer. Also pretty good with some golf clubs in his hands. Became a fixture at the AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am in 2018. Made history becoming the first African-American AM to win the Pro-Am in its long history. Followed that up with a win in 2020 as well. Larry loves himself some golf. There he is with Steph Curry, and he joins us here on set at 16. Great to see you, my friend. How are you?
Doing okay. It's great to be here, and always wonderful to have the tournament back in Phoenix. And you know, the record crowds and so much going on leading into the Super Bowl this week. I mean, it's a great week.
When did this tournament first get on your radar? You were laser focused on football and catching the football, but when did you first kind of sidle over and hang out here at TPC Scottsdale?
So I've been in Arizona since 2004, so I've been here a long time. And so I would come out to different events, and, you know, the Thunderbirds would always take care of me, let me ride on the golf carts and get the best views and sights on the golf course. So it was great to be able to come out, and I always had so much passion, you know, bring so much notoriety, bring the best players. Now it's an elevated event. I mean, all of the best players are here competing. And, you know, last year we had a lot of rain and other things. And the sun is, you know, record highs today, 85 degrees it's supposed to be. And hopefully it's a great week.
I got to say, Larry, I'm very concerned. You played the AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am at the weekend. You only beat one team. Is there a slump going on that we need to know about? You know, the Irish love the misfortunes of others, so lay it on us.
But it was great, you know, seeing Shane Lowry and Rory McIlroy. They held it down for the Irish team, you know. I did not hold it down for the Fitzgerald Irish team, you know. So I was a disgrace this week. The game has been a little rough. I haven't been able to put the work in, the time, and the practice that I need to. And so, you know, the golf is what you give it. You know, if you don't put the time in, it's going to give you.
And even if you do, it sometimes doesn't pay you back.
No, but usually you can finish at least, you know, top 50. You know what I mean? Not the bottom of the leaderboard.
It's an interesting time in the game, Larry, this difficult game that we all love. We have Justin Thomas asking of his peers to lean into media obligations a little bit more, to show their personality a little bit more. How did you handle that as a high-level elite NFL receiver, focusing on scoring touchdowns and winning games, but also being accessible and being an entertainer? Where did you draw that line?
Well, the dynamic has really changed. You know, with social media and all the things, people have opened up their lives. So the audience expects to be able to get an inside glimpse of who you are and your family and your kids and all the things that make you so interesting, right? And then it also grows the game because people want to watch it on Netflix, right? They want to watch it on Mondays and Tuesdays down in Florida at TGL. Like, so they want to be able to experience everything that the player is. It's not just good enough to be able to watch them on Thursday through Sunday hitting a golf ball. They want to know who they are. That's what makes the game continue to grow, and that's not going to change anytime soon, in my opinion.
One of the things that really has changed in this game is that the PGA Tour is now a for-profit entity. Some of those investors might look at a week like this and think that's closer to what golf needs to be on a week-to-week basis. Is this portable, in your mind, to other events on the PGA Tour? Would athletes welcome that, or do you think it's something that's best left for Scottsdale's identity?
I think this is a unique event. You know, you're able to get 400,000 people in here, and you know, every single day. And I think this event is very difficult to replicate anywhere else. I mean, from the logistics and the tents, and I mean, there's so much going on. I don't know if it's something that everybody can do, but for 1 week a year, it's an exciting time, and I think the players can appreciate it. Understand that, you know, it might be some talking in the backswings and, you know, a little bit of music on the 16th tee, different from other events, but I don't think that's necessarily something that they want to see every single weekend either.
Yes, choose your spots wisely. I know you love to play. Do you still consume it? Do you still watch it? Golf's evolving. You mentioned TGL. You've got, you know, the good Golf Now, Desert Knockout coming up. Got, you know, different ways of presenting the game, under the lights, par three, short courses. Do you watch it all, even as the professional game is fractured?
I watch everything. I watch everything. I'm going to Grass Clippings tomorrow night to watch it. If people are playing golf, I'm watching it. I just love it. You know, I always feel like I can pick something up. This weekend, even after my rounds at the AT&T, I was going and watching the highlights from the LPGA tournament down in Lake Nona. You know, I can pick up anything from anybody. You know, wow, I love the way Marty Fish chipped that shot, or I love the way Lydia Ko did this, or I love the way you can learn something from anybody. And that's the thing I really love about the game of golf. I watch a lot of college golf. Wow. You know, I go hit balls over at the Arizona State's facilities and watch them play. My boy Summer Hayes over there striping it, and you know, I love golf, and I love anybody who plays it.
What is the state of your game these days, Pebble Beach notwithstanding?
It's rough. It's rough.
What happened?
I just haven't been able to play.
Okay.
You know, working man, 80 hours a week. You know, building our venture fund, and you know, it requires a lot of time and detail, and I just don't have it. I got three young sons that I've been chasing around, but I'm not one to make excuses. You know, I don't want anybody to feel bad for me, but just know if you're watching at home, we play soon. I need more shots.
Speaking of your kids, your son Devin is a highly recruited wide receiver in town, so he's kind of going into the family business. Does he listen to you or just laugh at you?
No, he listens. He listens. You know, a couple years ago, you know, I kind of tried to stay, like, out of the fray, right? I didn't want to be that overbearing father that, you know, harps on him about this, that, and the third. And he came to me one day, and he was like, Dad, I really want you to be more involved in terms of, like, the process of being great at being receiver. And
wow.
I said, okay, if you want that, I'm more than happy to do that, and that's going to require me to be completely honest with you. I'm going to be transparent. I'm going to tell you the truth. I'm not going to tell you what you want me to hear all the time, but it's coming from a place of love. And so, like, he really started putting the work in. He works at it, you know, 5-6 days a week. It really matters to him. And, you know, you start to see the light go off in your kids. I mean, you guys have children. You understand what it's like to see them go truly pursue their passion. It's wonderful to see.
You're going to play the Pro-Am tomorrow. Do we need to alert viewers on a particular side of the fairway that is in most? You can tell I'm
relentless.
I'm
my guy's relentless
on this part of it here. Is it left or right, the danger zone?
No, it's both sides. You know, I went and hit some balls with Andrew Getson not too long ago. You know, so we're trying to, you know, get the cut back into the game. It didn't work out for me at Pebble Beach, but hopefully it shows up. You know, I want to eliminate one side of the golf course. So if I was a spectator, I would either, if I was teeing off, don't be in the fairways. go to the green or be at the tee box. You know, just keep it safe.
Speaking of contact sports, we spoke to Brian Urlacher last week.
Yep.
He told me it was difficult for him to replace the lure and the adrenaline and the violence of the NFL. And that golf has filled that gap to a certain extent. Was that difficult for you to replace just the adrenaline of Sundays? Or have you found that peace post-career?
Yeah, I wouldn't say it would be so much the adrenaline, and Lack is a heck of a player. We've competed many times. Love that guy. You know, not only just on the football field, but on the golf course as well. I didn't struggle so much with that part. You know, you miss the relationships. You know, it's you know, the coaches that you spend so many hours with, your teammates, the training staff, the equipment group, like, you spend so much time. You miss holidays. You're with them on Thanksgiving. You're on Christmas, New Year's, kids' birthday. Like, you're together so much, and so you miss that connectivity, and then being a part of something that's much bigger than yourself, being able to motivate and inspire and see so many people take a keen interest in it. I think those are the things that, you know, you probably miss the most.
Do you set golf goals in the way you would have in your professional career, where you had benchmarks you wanted to set for yourself?
Yeah, tomorrow, I just don't want to hit any spectators. Like, that's first goal, don't hit anybody. But, you know, you want to contribute. It's a shamble. I get to play with the same guys. I think John Morris and our group, COO at Waste Management, we play together for the last 8 years. I mean, so we have a great vibe. And I really love this experience to be able to walk, you know, for 4 hours with those guys. But my only goal really is just to not hit anybody and chip in where I can.
How much bigger is this whole entity compared to when you first moved to town some 20 years ago? Is it even different than you remember?
It's so big. I mean, remember, what was it, 1997? You know, I remember Tiger Woods making his hole-in-one on this particular hole.
Yes.
And, like, it wasn't even close to a stadium. It was just, like, dirt and grass and things like that and people walking all over the place. And now, like, you literally have a cathedral here.
Yeah.
And so many people come and show up and have a great time and support these players. They're the best in the world. And,
yeah,
you know, to be able to have all these people come out here is awesome.
Eagles, Chiefs, you got a pick? You have a thought? A prediction?
You know, if you look at the roster construction, I believe the Eagles have the better team, you know, from top to bottom, right? But, you know, there's this guy over there that wears the cape, number 15, named Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah.
When it gets to difficult moments and all the balls are in the air, he seems to find a way. That combination with him and Andy Reid are tough to deal with. And if it's close, they'll find a way to pull it out.
He has the clutch gene, much like yourself, my friend. It's great to spend some time with you. Have fun this week here at the TPC Scottsdale and WM.
Thank you. So great to be with you guys always.
There he is, the great Larry Fitzgerald on this Tuesday. Just getting started here at the WM Phoenix Open. After the break, we're joined by the short game chef, Parker McLaughlin, UCLA Bruin, who is going to show us what the players will face on some of the green complexes here at the WM Phoenix Open, like this 17th. Back on Golf Today. Last year, PGA Tour players called for change as the party scene got a little too wild here at TPC Scottsdale, with more on how the tournament is addressing some of the issues faced last year. Gonna head down with the drone, 16th tee boxes, where our Kira K. Dixon is standing by. Kira, what can you tell us about what's different for 2025?
Yeah, Damon, well, last year the tournament was really dealt a tough hand with the weather, the cold, the conditions, and that led to some issues with crowd control and safety throughout the tournament. And the Thunderbirds recognize that. They have made many changes to try and alleviate any of those issues and to make sure that they are set up for success should any weather issues or conditions things come up. Now, the players that sign up for this tournament, they know what they've signed up for, and they lean into the ethos of this golf tournament, but they also want to make sure that safety is a priority.
You know, I got to tip my hat to Chance and everyone at the Thunderbirds. I think it got to a point where just getting a little too crazy out here. Not in the craziness in the sense of stuff being said to the players, that we're going a little bit beyond and crossing the line a little bit. And I think that's just when it gets was getting a little too much. I think for me personally, I love playing this event. I pretty much played it every year that I've been a tour member. I enjoy playing in front of all these fans. I enjoy, you know, the energy that they bring. I enjoy the excitement, the fun they're having. It makes me want to, you know, play really well and have, you know, make a lot of birdies, hit a lot of great shots, so I can hear a lot of cheers. Like, that's something that gets the adrenaline going a little bit. But I think Chance and Thunderbirds, I think they understood that it got to a point that they needed to address it. And I don't think they needed to pull back a lot. They just need to do some subtle changes. And I think some of the changes they've done going into this year is going to be really great. And like I said, I want all the fans to come out here. I want them to enjoy it. It's 1 week of the year that is completely different than the rest of the PGA Tour. I think for the players that do play it, we enjoy it a lot. So, I want everyone to enjoy it, not just the adults that are drinking beverages, but the kids that are coming out to watch us play as well. So I'm excited to still experience the true, waste management feel that we normally have, with just a little bit more respect for us as tour players.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, I know there was some criticism last year. You know, I think a lot of it had to do with the weather. Obviously, it's tough because this place is an amphitheater. It's built to have people on hills and stands, and having that unusual weather in the desert and a lot of rain and cold was tough. You need to have plans, you know, to accommodate for that if things like that do happen. And look, we just want everyone to be safe and have fun. And I don't want anything negative, like a negative light to shine on an event that should be really fun and bring a lot of fans and be, you know, as long as everyone's safe. And I think it'll be great. I mean, guys, I think they've had a really good field and guys like to come here. And as long as they can kind of keep it within the reins as much as possible, I think this tournament's going to flourish for years to come.
This tournament's is crazy, right? But you know that coming in, you expect it, and it's different, which is nice. It's nice, the energy, the fans get so excited, and you can hear 16 from anywhere on the golf course. So I think they'll tighten it up a little bit, but you don't want to take away from what this tournament is either. And this tournament's crazy, and we're expecting some good craziness.
I mean, I'm always excited to play here. I think, last year was a one-off year. I mean, the tournament wasn't exactly dealt the best situation with the weather and you know, with the Super Bowl being here, the amount of people, but it also did get a little out of hand. But it seems like, you know, Chance and everybody made the precautions and the adjustments they needed to. And it's only Tuesday, and early on Tuesday, I'm sure by this afternoon, you'll get your normals. But it's a part of it. We know how it's like, and you know, I just think it, as long as it's safe, and I think it was getting to the point where, you know, it was getting a little aggressive or dangerous for some people, and nobody needs or wants that.
So, guys, you heard Justin Thomas mention the adjustments that the tournament is making. This is one of them, some new entrances to eliminate choke points as fans are coming in and out of the grounds here at the WM Phoenix Open. They've also widened cart paths and walkways just to make sure that everyone can progress freely throughout the grounds as they're enjoying the golf. Tickets have also been improved in the way that they're processed, the digital systems to make sure everyone gets in and out quickly. And something that's really important to 16 are some new signs that say, well, if you throw, you go. So anyone that's coming out to watch the action on 16 or anywhere out on the golf course, if you throw your cup or your drink, then tournament organizers are saying that you will be escorted off the premises. So if Sam Ryder comes out here and makes another hole in one, or Joel Damon decides to take his shirt off, just hold your drink in your hand and cheer for him.
If you throw, you go. Kira K. Dixon with the details on the changes here at the WM for 2025. And a lot of this, Eamon, sounds like it's about safety more than decorum. That when you have those choke points and bottlenecks and, you know, end of the world rain, which they had, very rare here in the Valley, that's when things happen that can really ruin a golf tournament.
Yeah, and that's what the tournament organizers really focused on last year, were the safety concerns. You had bottlenecks, you had slopes on this golf course that people couldn't navigate in wet weather. And, you know, you had terrible weather for several days. And then the ticket allocation issue as well, where people were kind of flooding in at the same time and there was nowhere for them to go, certainly created a safety hazard. All of the other aspects of it aren't anything new at Scottsdale. You know, we can walk or widen the walkways, but if guys aren't able to walk in a straight line, they're still going to pose a problem somewhere else on the golf course. But again, that's part of the identity. We just heard Gary Woodland say that. No player can come here and plead ignorance about the atmosphere of the tournament. Leaving aside the safety issues that the tournament says it has addressed, the decorum issues are what they are at this golf course. And frankly, if you can't handle this golf course, you have no business being at Bethpage in a Ryder Cup either. If this is what the tournament is and you choose to come here, you better embrace it because there's no point struggling against it.
Yeah, the players have an idea of what they're getting into when they sign up to compete at the WM Phoenix Open. Interesting, though, the you throw, you go. I mean, listen, it makes great pictures on television seeing those cans flying everywhere, but that's a safety hazard. There are volunteers, there are players, caddies down there, and while it may look good and like a cool thing to watch, it's obviously a very dangerous situation when there's a beverage being thrown on the green, even if you're trying to have some fun.
And we did see that on this very green several years ago when the cans were thrown onto the green. Now, being Irish, I would hope the cans were empty because you wouldn't actually like to waste it by throwing a full can onto the green when it's really actually a weapon at that stage. But those are the kind of rules that the tournament is going to want to put in place that kind of cross that barrier. They bridge the safety and the decorum issues. I do think they're always going to struggle with the reining in the decorum to some kind of level that the purists in the game would find tolerable. I don't think they'll ever get there, and I'm not necessarily sure they should. This tournament is what it is, and it's celebrated for that. But the can throwing does pose a safety issue, particularly in a very confined area like this, where they're essentially being thrown at whether it's players or caddies or other assorted tournament officials or broadcasters who are out there in the firing line.
We'll see what happens outside the ropes in this 2025 edition. How about inside the ropes, the strength of field this week? Headlined by the world number one Scottie Scheffler, who won in 2022-2023. What a gift that the world number one continues to patronize this event. Three of the top 10, 11 of the top 25 in the OWGR. You got the likes of JT here, Ricky Fowler loves coming here, Hideki Matsuyama. 28 of the top 50 in the world are also in the field. And speaking of the world number one, getting some work in, coming off that T9 last week in his debut at Pebble Beach. You know, it was T63 strokes gained around the greens. So, Eamon, that tells you that maybe just a little rust to work off as he heads into the business part of the schedule.
So you're telling every other player in the world there might be hope, Damon, that there's at
maybe
least
for a day or two,
that there's one weakness that's not perhaps sealed off at this point in this game? Well, that would be where the rust would show itself, is around the greens. But I actually thought it was a very solid performance we saw from Scottie Scheffler last week, bearing in mind, even leaving aside the hand injury that he sustained at Christmas, Scottie had only played the Hero World Challenge, one event, since the Tour Championship. And the Tour Championship ended on September 1st of last year, so that's not very many competitive reps at all. Of course, he won the only rep that he took in that time down in the Bahamas. So there is going to be rust, even regardless of the injury with Scottie Scheffler. So if a Scottie shows up injured and rusty in Pebble Beach and is still good enough for a top 10, to me that doesn't signal any reason for concern as he heads into the season looking for a third Hall of Fame season in a row.
His adaptability has been remarkable to watch, from a blade putter to a mallet, from cross-handed to claw grip, traditional putt. It just doesn't seem to matter. He is someone who seems to be able to incorporate changes into his arsenal and to not miss a beat, to go out and win the Hero. And I know it's not a hit and giggle. You got some highly competitive, motivated players who want to win if you're playing, you know, pinochle on a Saturday night. He went out there with a new putting style that he'd been working on, and he wins the golf tournament. That told me a lot, that this is a special, special player.
Yeah, and when Tiger Woods' name is above the door of the tournament, it's not a hit and giggle for anyone. And, yeah, I mean, you go back to Scottie's first win here, and that's why I think this week is a better gauge of where he is, because he's got a comfort factor on this golf course. He won in 22, won in 23, and it seems almost bizarre to think now that win here just 3 years ago was the first win of his career. He had all of this promise and a number of near misses before that, but he was all promise unfulfilled.
Yeah.
And here we are 3 years later. He's got 13 PGA Tour victories, got a couple of green jackets in his closet, a couple of Players' Championship trophies. This was the putt back in 2022 that gave him that lead out on the 13th hole. And, you know, he is so remarkably simplistic in how he approaches the game. And I think that's what separates him from the other guys at the top of the world ranking right now, is that there is no noise in Scottie Scheffler's life. Whatever noise might exist, it's between him and his team in terms of how he wants to change strategy or what his obligations are. But he's not involved in tour politics. Mm. He's not involved in TGL.
Yeah.
For example, he doesn't have distractions. Everything in Scottie Scheffler's life is geared around making Scottie Scheffler the best possible golfer in the world. And that's why for the last 2 years, while others have been distracted to some degree by that, Scottie Scheffler has just racked up win after win. And I mean, last year alone, Scottie Scheffler made north of $60 million by concentrating purely on what he's paid to do.
And this has become a special place for him, as we showed you his wins in 2022 and 2023. We spent some time on the range yesterday speaking to Nikolai Højgaard in Lourdes, his longtime caddy who's worked for the likes of Henrik Stenson and Justin Rose. And I asked him, what impresses you about Scottie? And Lourdes told me it's the short game. He says, I think his short game is starting to be, you know, worthy of comparison to Seve and Tiger and Phil Mickelson. And I almost fell over. But it's the same thing that his college coach, John Fields, once told me, that his short game was second to none. And we marvel at his iron play and his consistency with strokes gained approach. But my goodness, the respect that his peers and caddies seem to have for his short game in particular, that really caught my attention yesterday.
Yeah, well, I mean, you'd need to be Sherlock Holmes to go find a clue to weakness in his shot length statistics anywhere. I mean, I think it was 14 different statistical categories. Mm. He led the tour last year. And the peers know that Scottie's greatest weapon is also the neck up.
Yeah.
And the belief is there. There is no doubt in his mind. And the rest of it falls into sync. I mean, I still remember sitting in Pinehurst last summer, and his coach, Randy Smith, was asked, what are you working on? And he said, nothing.
Wow.
And to me, that ought to be terrifying to everyone else in the field, because this guy was clearing away the best player in the world at the time, and he didn't have anything to work on. And he's in a great comfort zone in his career, and I don't see that going anywhere.
A lot of number ones on the stat sheet for the world number one, Scottie Scheffler, including the short game. Speaking of the short game, chef UCLA Bruin Parker McLaughlin going to join us on the set after the break. Back on golf today, looking live at the famed 16th, with the help of our drone at TPC Scottsdale. We're somewhere in those booths. Can you see us? That's me waving at you, folks. Of course, WM celebrating its 16th year as title sponsor of the WM Phoenix Open. The greenest show on grass, 4 p.m. Eastern Thursday. Things are going to get a little crazy. Our coverage begins in earnest.
And someone who knows a little something about winning on the PGA Tour is sitting right next to us here in the booth. Parker McLaughlin, back in 2008, won the Reno Tahoe Open, now the Barracuda Championship. He did so in dominant fashion as well. 7-shot victory. Mm. Since then, he's become known as the short game chef. Here are some of the notable players he's worked with currently: Sam Burns, Matthew Pavon, Anna Nordqvist, Colin Morikawa, Keith Mitchell, Tom Kim, soon to be adding Damon's Hack.
Yes, you better believe
that list. And Parker joins us now. Parker, welcome to the show. You have a little bit of a special history with this hole.
Yeah, so I was probably one of the first to walk down this hole. I was with Oakley at the time. You saw the picture there. And they stuffed my bag full of like 25 pairs of sunglasses. I walked down this hole, threw them away to all the fans, got everybody riled up. Next day in my locker, I got a note. So anyway, I wanted to start off by giving you guys a little gift here.
This is awesome. Which one do you want? Okay. I'm the Bruin, so I was going to go with the blue.
Well, he's got to earn the spinner title here.
Okay.
I don't know if he quite earned it yet.
I hope you don't have the video of our short game lesson anywhere.
It's queued up.
Oh, boy.
No, I'm just kidding.
How did you make the transition from being a tour player? Because, you know, we've talked in the past. You've had the highs of winning at the highest level of the game. You've also been open about the struggles that can happen at that level of the game as well. Now you're a much in-demand short game coach. How did that transition actually happen?
Very randomly, to be honest with you. I had a caddy friend of mine who was caddy for me a lot, and he said, hey, I'm going to film some videos of you, like, giving some short game tips and put them on Instagram. And I'm like, I'm not even on Instagram.
Wow.
And so he said, I'll film them for you. We filmed them right here at TPC Scottsdale. That was probably 5 years ago. And Short Game Chef was born. He said, you got to come up with a name. I'm like, I can't use my own name. He said, no, come up with, like, a clever name. So anyway, I came up with Short Game Chef, and it sort of taken off from there. A few days later, Kevin Streelman reached out and said, hey, I see you're doing some teaching. I want to spend some time with you. And it really just sort of snowballed from there.
So was he the first? Streelman was the first? But like, how did the conga line develop? Because that's what you've had, and you've had so many players come to you and seek your help. When did you recognize that this was kind of a strength of yours that you could convey a very difficult part of the game?
I think it's a confluence of things. I think, number one, I did some TV with you guys. I did some PGA Tour Live, helped the communication skills. You know, my dad was a great legendary basketball and volleyball coach in Hawaii. So I think I've sort of got a lot of those things mixed in with a lot of golf knowledge. I got to give a huge shout out to Paul Azinger, who was an amazing mentor of mine, who I learned a ton from. And so a lot of those things put together, and then taking off my playing hat and putting on a different lens of a coaching hat and looking at these things, how can I see these certain patterns, and then which pieces of the puzzle can I put in here to then help this player, you know, get to a spot where they're hitting a most consistent shot time after time.
There's so much golf content out there and so much around social media and YouTube. How much are you finding that audience growing and become increasingly passionate? That's something that's adjacent to but quite separate from the PGA Tour product week to week.
I mean, golf is in like this whole new frontier right now, it seems. The TGL, I thought, has been fascinating. I've been glued to the set watching it. My guys, the Grass League, you guys had them on yesterday. You know, I'm a huge fan of what they're doing and the golf course down there. So shout out to those guys for staying grassy always. And I just think golf's in this new place. I met the good guys yesterday. It's just like this new era that we're coming into. Yeah. And I really hope that the PGA Tour embraces it. I think that there's a huge area for the PGA Tour to maybe lean in a little bit more to things that aren't necessarily traditional PGA Tour golf. So the Grass League is par 3 golf at night featuring amateur golfers. Why can't the PGA Tour lean into that? I think that'd be incredible to really put some weight behind it. And I think there's a lot of interest in things that are consumable in the golf market but aren't necessarily PGA Tour golf. Although PGA Tour golf will always have its space, I think there's so many areas now where the PGA Tour and other leagues can sort of coexist.
We're going to have Garrett Clark of Good Good joining us in just a little bit. Want to dig into this golf course since you know it so well, and specifically some of the greens and the green surrounds. Let's start with hole number 9. You may remember Phil Mickelson had a putt for 59 on this hole back in 2013. It's more wide than deep, Parker.
Yeah, correct. It's a very narrow green. And when they get that pin on the left-hand side, there's a real fall off there to the left. You can see it's shaved quite closely. And if that pin's on that front left-hand corner there, you'll see guys maybe with a 3-wood, maybe with the putter, maybe hit a little bump 7 or 9 iron, or maybe even fly it up there if they've got a good enough lie and put some spin on it. But this is one of those greens where you're going to see a lot of guys missing the green here, so short game will really get shown off.
Really, creativity is tested when the options present themselves. Let's move on to the 14th hole. Starting to get to the meat of the end of the round here.
Yeah, I mean, this hole is just a beast, right? It's one of the longest holes on the golf course, 490, par 4. And so you can see that whole right-hand side there. Again, the front right pin, guys are going to miss to the right. They're not going to really want to bail in the bunker left. So that front right pin, you'll see a lot of misses short and right, and you're hitting uphill. So you got to have a little bit of height, a little bit of softness. add some spin to that shot off of a tight lie, really test these players' skill set.
It looks like a nightmare for a high handicapper. I'm just seeing that approach green above the fairway. Tough for the 20 handicapper?
Well, I mean, Eamon would grab the putter immediately, but
that's a cheap shot.
These tour players, they are going to grab the 60 degree. They've become really adept. You know, every tour player that I've worked with has always asked me, how can I hit it a little higher with the same amount of spin?
How about 15, the par 5?
Yeah, great risk reward. You're going to see a lot of guys bail into that left bunker. Now, to that left pin, that's really fast from left to right. This green slopes back to front, left to right. And so if you bail on the left-hand side there in that bunker, it's a really fast bunker shot down to a left-hand side pin here. So that's a tricky one for people to watch.
How about the bunkers here in terms of the sand? Is this kind of your typical TPC PGA Tour sand?
Yeah, I mean, you got to put some shades on when you go in there. I think they call it Augusta White.
Oh, okay.
Is this type of sand. And it is... if they pack it properly, if they get a little bit of water in there, guys can hit some nice spinners out of there. But if they fluff it up, the ball will come out with a little bit more release to it. So it really depends. You know, morning time, you can get those tight spinners. In the afternoon, as it gets a little more fluffed up, the ball will release a bit more.
Let's go on to 17, one of the great drivable par fours in golf. Most of the field is going to go for this. Leaves a lot of options around this hole, Parker.
Yeah, this is one of the most fun holes, I think, on the PGA Tour. That back left section is so interesting. If you hit driver here and you bail out to the right-hand side, as you can kind of see there, you almost have no shot to that back left corner. So guys are going to really be particular when they're playing it to the back left corner. They may actually lay back a little bit, which brings in that sort of cross bunker. But if you get the pins on the right-hand side, the common bail is out to the right, as to not go into the water, and that's a very difficult shot. We saw Brooks Koepka hole one from there a few years ago, hitting sort of a bump and check type of a shot. A variety of options when you get on the surrounds of this green, the 17th green. It's one of the more fun holes. I think if I was going to buy a Skybox, I would buy it on this hole right
really?
Here.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely.
Wow. How about that back left finger? That's just that's slippery.
I mean, I would love if they put two pins back there in the 4 days, but obviously they're not going to do that. It's a really dicey hole location. It falls off towards the water. You really got to control your height, your trajectory, your spin to get it close to that back left pin. It is diabolical. It's so fun to watch.
This is such a fascinating test of golf. I'm curious, back to what you do well, which is help, you know, the great players, but also the high handicappers. Can you cure the chipping yips? Can you put that on your CV, on your resume, that you've actually done that?
I've had about over 100 that I've helped out of the chipping yips. I can't say that I've helped our friend here completely out of them. We got him to a spot where he was hitting some good shots, but then he gives up on me like he always does.
I pay upon results, Parker, and I ain't seeing any results, so that's why you haven't been paid. But
this is true. I did not get paid. That's okay.
I wanted to bring up, so yesterday was the last Monday qualifier for the Phoenix Open, which to me is one of the great traditions in golf. It really is kind of a Hunger Games scenario every week of guys out there who've won on tour trying to play their way in, and it's been eliminated as part of the changes going forward at most events. You've played Monday qualifiers here. What's that experience like, and should it be part of the tour and something the tour leans into?
I do. I think so. I think it's a great story. I think it's an opportunity for somebody you've never heard of to be able to go out there, play a couple good rounds of golf, maybe a pre-qualifier and then a Monday qualifier, and then be able to play out here in front of 100,000 fans. To me, it allows for access to, you know, for a regular guy, access to a PGA Tour event. I think it's something special. I think it's something unique. I think it should stay as a part, even if it's a 1, 2, 3, 4 spotter, it doesn't matter. It should stay a part of the PGA Tour schedule. You know, I've Monday qualified and Monday qualified into the, I think it was the last Genesis before it became a signature event. And that was, you know, something that is, you know, you hang your hat on. It's pretty neat. I did this Monday qualifier because it was 5 minutes from my house about 10 times. The one time that I nearly got there, I ended up being in a 4-for-3 playoff. There's only three spots here at this Phoenix Open. I was in a 4-for-3 playoff. On the second playoff hole, I hit this wedge right at it, and I'm staring it down. It hits the flagstick on the fly, comes off the green. I make bogey, and that was
short
it for
game
me.
Chef didn't get up and down there?
No, I chipped it to about 5 feet, and I missed it.
Oh, my God.
If we're trading cheap shots, I've got plenty as well, Parker.
Leave it to Eamon to bring up one of your happiest moments, right?
Of course he did his homework on that.
Last question before you go. Who has the most underrated short game on tour? The one that we don't talk about, who you watch closely?
Boy, that's a tricky question. You know, I think, like, one of the guys I'm most proud of is Tom Kim, Keith Mitchell. Like, those two guys, I think, have really made strides in their short game from being really good ball strikers to not paying quite as much attention to their short game. Those guys have both made, you know, great leaps in their short game prowess. And it's been neat to kind of be a part of that journey. I think Sam Burns and I started, you know, middle of last year, and he's done an unbelievable job in the trajectory of his short game. I think someone like a Sam Burns, I think you'll see over the course of this year start to really shine. He's starting to really take some confidence. He's sending me some great numbers that he's been doing as far as some of the drills that we've done over the off season. So he would be someone that I would pay attention to, put on your list of guys whose short game is going to start going in this direction.
Parker, you've helped a lot of people through the years. Couldn't help Eamon, but that might say more about Eamon than your teaching skills. We appreciate you hopping on the set with us on this Tuesday, buddy.
You have to work with him.
I do. Oh, I sharp elbows up here, my friend. Great to have Parker McLaughlin, the UCLA Bruin, with us, the short game chef. And great to have the fans filing in on a beautiful Tuesday outside Phoenix.